It's Tuesday, May 4th, 2021. I'm Tanya Harris, and welcome to TMI Daily, your daily roundup of everything people are talking about online since they aren't allowed to talk about it in person. Yesterday, Bill and Melinda Gates announced that they are getting divorced after 27 years of marriage. In the divorce, the couple will split their fortune and property equally, although Bill will get to keep the Office 365 subscription since no one else would want it. Famed New York restaurant 11 Madison Park will reopen with a fully vegan menu. This is great news for New Yorkers who were hoping to find a place to overpay for vegetables. Speaking of the Big Apple, New York City announced that it will have remote learning days instead of snow days next year. Boo! What's next? Forcing the kids to watch pre-taped lessons from the teacher instead of a movie when their hungover substitute phones it in? McDonald's announced they are giving away free McFlurries over their misunderstood McFlurry spoons, which some people mistook as a straw. And yet, still nothing for Big Mac fans who confused it with beef. In her first campaign ad, Caitlyn Jenner describes herself as, quote, a thoughtful disruptor. Maybe I'm wrong, but can anyone associated with the Kardashians call themselves thoughtful? Some fans are criticizing Billie Eilish for her Vogue lingerie photo shoot because it reveals the thigh tattoo that Billie swore no one would ever see, making this the most fan discussion about a pop singer in her underwear since Madonna decided to stop wearing lingeries in photos. Conan O'Brien announced that June 24th will be the final episode of his TBS talk show and promised that these final 2 months would be a fond look back at his 11 years on the network. Also, since the show is called Conan, it's going to be a lot harder for Jay Leno to weasel his way in and steal it, even with a red wig on. Will Smith posted a photo of himself looking a bit pudgy and said that he was in the worst shape of his life. In all fairness, it didn't look all that bad. Will, call us when you slip into Uncle Phil bod territory. Michael Jackson's estate won a tax case by successfully arguing that the IRS overvalued the late singer's assets, putting the heirs on the hook for a $700 million tax bill. Wow, $700 million? Unlike most Jackson court cases, this one wasn't a minor dispute. In honor of May the 4th, Best Buy, Amazon, and Walmart are offering every Star Wars film on Blu-ray for only $17 each. Wow, and you thought never being able to get a girlfriend didn't have its perks. Now, let's send it over to tonight's TMI Daily Cast and Crew Roundtable. Stay safe.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of TMI Daily. I'm Veronica Aiello, and as always, I'm joined by some of my TMI Daily crew. Let's go around and say hello to everyone watching at home or listening to our TMI Daily podcast. Let's start with you, Pete.
Well, Ian's not here tonight, so I'm so excited to say that I'm back to not wearing pants.
just for tonight, he'll be back.
Just for tonight, he'll be back tomorrow, so I'll be wearing pants again then.
I just want to say that it was really lonely today around lunchtime. I missed him because he's
I'm not enough.
And Pete says, am I not enough? He asked me that. And I said, it's not that you're not enough. I just really miss Ian because we have really nice conversations over our lunch. So I miss you, Ian, if you're watching. Elizabeth.
Oh, hello. Happy Star Wars Day. And may the 4th be with you. And also, for more observant friends, may the Schwartz be with you.
Okay. Joe.
Hi, everyone listening on Google Podcasts. And like Elizabeth said, happy National Star Wars Day. May the 4th be with you. Of course, if you are on the Sith side, then just wait for Revenge of the Sith right after Cinco de Mayo. So either way, we get it all done. It's also National Orange Juice Day. And I'd also like to say about that last joke, I know a lot of Star Wars fans that have boyfriends and girlfriends. So don't take that as it is. If you're a big fan of Star Wars, you can still get yourself a really nice girl or guy or, you know, whatever you're into.
Hey, Danny, what's up?
Wait, what are all the, wait, hold on.
Like non-binary.
Girl or guy or whatever else you're, what else is there, Joe?
It's Star Wars. There's all sorts of stuff, sir. You want a Gungan? We could get you a Gungan.
solid answer. Very good.
Danny, how you doing?
Hello and happy. What date's today?
Star Wars.
Oh, happy Day? Tuesday. May the 4th be with you. Slight brain fart.
Chris.
What's up, everybody? Happy 4th. All that stuff. Shameless plug. Go to flapperscomedy.com. I'm doing a show this Friday at 5 p.m. in the Yoohoo Room. So go to flapperscomedy.com and get your tickets for the show this Friday. And you can see this face talk a whole bunch of shit. That's funny.
That's right. You keep buying tickets for Chris, and one day he's going to get up to one of the Marx Brothers rooms.
Hey.
You know, we did watch one of your last shows at Flappers, but I have to say one thing, and I'm just going
to
tell
you. You've never come to mine.
What are you talking about?
No, we've come to it.
Hello. No,
yeah.
Fine, Elizabeth. We didn't go to one of Chris's shows.
No, I'm
not. That's what I mean. I don't see you in the Zoom.
I mean,
I've been in the Zoom.
But I do want to tell anybody out there, if you are being like kind of like pressured into going to see one of your friends in a comedy club, never mention their name when you get to the door, because they push them back further. So you have to see every comic that's even worse than your friend. Not to say that
you have
to see every comic that's worse.
If you want to get revenge, if you want to play a good joke on your friend, mention it so that they have to stay through the whole show. And listen, Chris may not be yet in the Harpo room or the Zeppo room, but if he does really good in the Yoohoo, he may end up in the Richard Marx room. So please buy a ticket.
Or the Karl Marx rooms. That's where I'm trying to be.
But later on in the show, we're going to be joined by Minji Chang from the podcast, First of All. So make sure you stay tuned for that. We're going to have a great conversation with her. Okay, so let's get started with tonight's show. Yesterday, British Vogue released images from a cover story photo shoot they did with pop singer Billie Eilish. Although music and fashion have gone together for as long as music and fashion have existed, this group of photos caused a stir because Billie, who was best known for multicolored hair and loose-fitting baggy clothing, was photographed with platinum blonde hair and dressed in form-fitting lingerie. So, did any of you see the photos, and what did you think of them? I thought she looked very pretty. That's all I have to say. Chris, let's start with you.
First off, I don't know why everybody's tripping. She kind of did it almost like the most appropriate, not like most statement inducing way, like in her teens when she was not of age and she didn't want no kind of trouble. She was dressing in like, you know, sweats and baggy clothes and things of that nature. And then like she becomes of age and she wants to do a very classy, gorgeous magazine shoot, which she did that for herself, because if my research is correct, you don't get paid to be on the cover of Vogue. They don't pay you for that. It's simply just for clout and to like build your audience. So she did it the right way. She's letting people know that she is an adult now. She's not going to be doing the same things. She's probably going to have like some new music, a new sound, something different. And she's basically letting the world get ready for it. And I don't understand why everybody's so pissed off. It's not like she straight up went to like Penthouse or like a Playboy magazine. She did a classy national magazine.
She's not screwed this month.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, she did a classy photo shoot. Why are you mad at that? And that's the thing too. It's like, you always see this. It's like, you know, women are allowed to do what they want, but it's like, then they do what they want. Then it's almost sometimes women that beat them up the most. And it's like, well, so what you meant to say was, do what you want as long as I like it. That's what it sounds like.
I thought it also had like an old Hollywood charm to it too.
Yeah.
Old Hollywood glamour.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I agree with you, Chris. It was very tasteful. It was just very nice. It was very elegant. Elizabeth.
Yeah, it's a different look, but it's not like, it didn't feel hyper sexualized. It, like, right. Everybody was saying, it's very kind of elegant and sexy, but in like a mature way. Chris was kind of saying, it really is like she was going to be damned if she did, damned if she didn't, about just about anything she did. Because everybody was all up in arms. Why is she in baggy clothes all the time? We never see her figure. That's not great. But then one paparazzi photo of like her jacket down a little, people went ape shit. We're like, are those her boobies? That's hot. And it was like, she's still like a teenager. She's and it's 17. Gross. Yeah. It was so like creepy and weird. And so the fact that she took control of it this way and got to do this very much on her terms, saying, I want to wear this outfit or be styled this way and not be forced into it like so many pop stars before her, is pretty incredible and powerful. And, you know, I don't know if like she'll have a new sound or stick with the look entirely, but somebody brought up something that Taylor Swift said in the documentary thing that came out a year or two ago, that female pop stars constantly have to reinvent themselves. Every album has to have like a new look usually, or era, or, you know, and male pop stars and musicians and artists don't generally have to go through that kind of intense, like, change. Like, think about all the Gaga cycles. Katy Perry's had to do it a bunch of times.
Well, because Madonna did it first.
Madonna
kind of created that whole era. She was the first one that every album she put out, there was this new look and a new, like, attitude.
Yeah, and that, but then everybody was pressured into following that, whether they wanted to or not, which is the you know, and other edge of the sword. But yeah, I agree with Chris, and I think, you know, other people are kind of feeling like it's really not that scandalous at the end of the day, and she took charge of it.
Joe, what did you think?
First of all, I liked it. I love it when they do that throwback kind of stuff. It's very old Hollywood, and I thought it was pretty classy. What I don't understand is, why is it always with the younger, whether they're a pop star or an actress or that, when it's a younger woman, it's a controversy thing. But for some reason, young guys, when they're kids or teenagers and they go into adulthood, it's not the same thing. It's just like they roll into it. It's like, oh, you know, like Justin Bieber was a kid and then he rolled in, man, and was no big deal. It's like, oh, look, look, he grew into a hot guy, you know. Timberlake's the same way with his Top Ramen hair, but like he went into that same kind of thing. But it was not a problem. But every time it's a young girl, there's some sort of controversy, and I don't understand that. Well, you know, they grow up the exact same way.
Society hypersexualizes women and young girls especially, but we're also weirdly puritanical. So everybody wants them to be very sexy, wear sexy things, and be hot. But then if they do it, and especially if they're happy about it, then they're bad. They've done something bad.
That's what I'm saying. But
it's a stupid dichotomy.
But a guy can do the same thing. Like Bieber takes his shirt off and gets. I mean, the only controversy they had was that they photoshopped his abs. You know, that was a controversy. It wasn't the fact that, you know, his shirt's off now. It looks like that.
They photoshopped his abs and gave him a little bit more bulge.
The point being is that no one said anything about that. They said it was about the Photoshop.
Yeah.
So you know, it's always, for some reason, girls have this problem and guys don't. And I don't think that's fair. Yeah.
But to be fair, if Justin Bieber did a lingerie photo shoot for Vogue, I would probably have a problem with that. Just saying.
You know what? He probably gets the same scrutiny, if not more, because old dude just did it. Kid Cudi just did it on fucking SNL, and everybody went fucking ape shit because he wore a dress. Just a dress. Mm-hmm. Nothing. Not a lingerie shoot. He just wore a dress, and everybody was like, what kind of image is SNL trying to... Blah, 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 blah. My kid's got a... It was crazy.
But are we also... Okay, I feel like we're kind of on two different pages here, and let me explain what I mean by that. What I mean is, are we talking about why are some of her fans being critical of her, or why are people in general being critical of her?
Both.
Have some examples of some of the things that fans keep bringing up that she said in the past. So what are we actually focusing? Or are we focusing on both?
I think we're kind of.
See, I think we're talking about both. I think the problem is we're talking about what we think and not what the controversy people are saying.
Right, okay.
That seems to be the problem, because we're not getting to what the actual reason is. Because if it was us, it would have been no big deal.
Yeah, yeah. But okay, so then like I just said, you know, most of her fans have been very positive, you know, with this shoot, but some of her fans have been critical of it. And this is why. Billie Eilish has been very outspoken about having people judge her based on her music and not on her looks. In 2019, she said in a Calvin Klein ad, quote, nobody can have an opinion because they haven't seen what's underneath. Nobody can be like, she's slim thick. She's not slim thick. She's got a flat ass. She's got a fat ass. No one can say any of that because they don't know. So is it fair to say that she's probably the first major artist to take on body shaming? Now, I know you guys have been giving me examples of, you know, people in like Lady Gaga, Madonna, But is she the first, you know, person, like it's a pop artist, contemporary, that's actually taking this on, Pete?
See, I think she's the first proactively one doing it, because there's a lot of artists that come around to it when it becomes a problem for them. Like Kelly Clarkson became all about fat shaming after she gained weight. But the story goes, she actually was made to lose weight in order to be on American Idol and was forced into staying thin for the first few years of her career. And then when her career kind of started dipping a little bit, then her handlers didn't have a problem with what she was doing. But then she kind of became more body positive. Whereas Billie Eilish, it seems like from the beginning of her career, has always kind of pushed this idea that it's the music first and then everything else you think about me is a distant second.
Okay, Chris?
Okay, so the problem with that, her saying that as a quote, is just two problems. One, she was probably saying that around the time she was like 15, 16, 17, so she's a fucking kid. So, of course, you're going to have different opinions when you're a kid and then don't really know the world around you. She was homeschooled, for Christ's sake. Secondly, if you go back and listen to what she said, she wanted to be about the music first. She's known for her music first, not being a hot girl or hot woman or being a model or some shit like that. She's known for her music. She controlled that. She controlled everything. If anything, this is like the most feminist way you can control how you are viewed in the media, because she waited until people knew only her for her music and not her body. And then she went and did a very classy, beautiful shoot and was like, hey, now you can see me because I feel like you now respect me for my artistry and not my looks.
Mm-hmm. So you feel like she felt like she got to that point. Okay, that's fair.
Exactly, because she did exactly what the quote says. She's like, I want people to know my music first, and then after they can have an opinion. And now she let them have an opinion. She did it for herself. It's not like she got caught, a weird shot coming out of a limo or some shit like that. She made this happen.
And it was her choice to.
For her choice.
Mm-hmm. Elizabeth.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree absolutely with Chris. I think the only other artist, not only, but the only one that leaps to mind anyway, is maybe Lizzo, who has been very like, she's super talented and does everything. And she's like, I don't care what you have to say about me and my body. It hurts if you're mean, but like at the end of the day, I'm still a super talented musician and I still do all these great things and I don't give a fuck what you have to say about it.
But let me ask a question, and this isn't meant to be a bad question, but whatever. The difference between Lizzo and Billie Eilish is that there's an elephant in the room, pardon the pun, I'm not trying to be the smartest about it, but with Lizzo, like, they're ahead of time, she's kind of saying, I'm a big girl and I don't care if you call me a big girl. Whereas with Lizzo, with Billie Eilish, clearly you see, I mean, she's not a thin girl, but she's by no means like a large woman.
They definitely had to take different approaches, I think, because, Billie Eilish is ultimately closer to the generalized standard body type that is preferred.
Yeah.
But even then, but even at that, she knew she would face all this pressure. And like I said, there was one shot of her chest in like a paparazzi still, and people were insane about it.
Yeah.
So
I have it up on the screen now.
Yeah. So I think they had to take control in different ways, and control for each of them is very, I agree, very different things. Mm. People would ultimately, and will ultimately, for the most part, be kinder to Billie Eilish in the long run than they will to Lizzo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's fair.
So then it seems like she's been preparing her fans for something like this. Last year, she released an Instagram photo of herself in a bikini. And then after she released that picture, she said in an interview with Days Magazine, and again, I'm quoting her, I saw comments like, how dare she talk about not wanting to be sexualized and wear this? It was trending. There were also comments like, I don't like her anymore because as soon as she turns 18, she's a whore. Like, dude, you know, man. If there's a day when I'm like, you know what? I feel comfortable with my belly right now, and I want to show my belly, I should be allowed to do that. Last year, she released a 3-minute video called Not My Responsibility, in which she said, And a quote, if I wear what is comfortable, I am not a woman. If I shed the layers, I'm a slut. Though you've never seen my body, you still judge it and judge me for it. Why? So we make assumptions about size, we make assumptions about people based on their size. We decide who they are and we decide what they're worth. So I asked before if we thought she was the first major artist to address body shaming. So let me ask you, would you say that this stance is part of her brand? Not. Elizabeth.
I mean, sure. Like everything an artist does is part of their brand at the end of the day. But I think it's something that she can also truly passionately believe in. And, you know, and she's 100% right, though. And like I said earlier, this everything, especially a woman artist does, is damned if she does, damned if she doesn't. People were mad she didn't show her body enough. People were mad she covered up. People are mad she's taking it off. Like, you can't, it's a no-win scenario. People are going to be mad at her either way, no matter what she does. And she calls that out in the quote. And people wanted that access to her body to decide, is she sexy? Is she sexy enough? Does she need to lose weight? Does she need to gain weight? Are her boobs big enough or is her butt big enough to be a performer? We want to see that body and decide what we want to do with it, and she's denied everybody that, and it drove people crazy. And so it's a very powerful branding stance, yes, but just a powerful stance in general.
I don't know anything about her, to be honest. I mean, now I know more than I would have ever known about her. But how old is she?
Just turned 18.
She's 19 now.
I think she's 19 now.
I have no concept of how old she is.
I could be wrong. She could be 18, but I think she's 19.
But she's at least.
She's 19. Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. Got it. I just want to just kind of have that in mind. Okay. Pete.
Well, I think the thing is with her, that the look that she came in with attracted a lot of disenfranchised kids. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of kids out there that saw her and saw her as somebody that they could kind of attach themselves to. The same way, like, my generation would have looked at somebody like Robert Smith from The Cure and said, oh, he's an outsider like me. And because of that, they had this incredible devotion to him. Now, the only difference between the two is that Robert Smith at six, almost 60, still looks exactly the way he did when he was 25.
He does.
Whereas Billie Eilish at 17 looked a lot different than what she looks at it like at 19. And so that's where I think some of the problem comes from, because it is, you know, as much as the music is probably the first and foremost thing. And you know what? She is incredibly talented. I mean, that goes without saying. I mean, you know, whether you like what she does musically or you don't, you cannot like deny the musicmanship to the artistry. It's just the problem really is that, you know, like anything else, that's not the only thing that sold her as an artist. And I think that's where you're going to see some of the backlash, because there's the problem for her fans is that they don't have anybody that's going to style them in, you know, in nicer clothes, help them if they need to lose a little bit of weight so that they can look good for a photo shoot, or put them in those clothes. And that's where I think you're seeing some of the people that are complaining about it.
Joe.
Yeah, you know, that does have a really good thing about. I mean, the way I see it with the musical artists is if you enjoy the music, like the look shouldn't matter. But in that case, especially at her age and the age of her fans, it is kind of a big thing. You know, her fans came on board because she's wearing like the baggy sweatpants and the things like that and all that. So it's like, hey, you know, I can be who I want to be. And look, she's getting all of this positive feedback and all that from being dressed like that, and said, well, I can do that too. And then she turns around and does this, and it's something that a lot of her fans think that they just can't do. Now you can, but they just aren't at that point yet. You know, and that comes with age and things like that too, you know, where you're much better off of it. But the thing is, don't stop listening to the music. That's the big thing, you know. The music should be first, like Billy says. Don't let the look change the music, but I get it. You know, I get it, but I, at the same time, I'm like, it's not, if I was a fan, the change of the look wouldn't stop me. By the way, I'd like to point out, I'm a huge fan of Weird Al. He recently shaved his head, so he's actually following me. So hey, weird.
I want to Danny. Go ahead, Chris.
So the thing is that I think people seem to forget is that, like, you know, a lot of stuff that she said about, like, body positivity, or like how she felt about, like, how the world should view her body. Again, we got to remember, like, this is a young girl trying to grow up in the public eye, and she's trying to figure out the world while being famous. And people seem to forget that, like, what it was like to be, you know, 17, 18, 19 years old, and not even under the same kind of scrutiny that she is as an artist. Yes, she did make the choice to be famous in a lot of ways, like, that's on her. But at the same token, you also got to remember, like, this is a human being trying to navigate through the world. And the same way she felt about something at 17, she might still feel the same way, but decided to take a different approach to it because she's just trying to figure out life. You can't just go around the same method being like, I mean, like, she couldn't keep this, that look going on forever. You know what I mean? Like, nobody's gonna buy the, like, the slumpy teenage I'm in sweatpants look when she's 30 fucking five if she's still famous. You know what I mean? It just ain't gonna look the same. It's not gonna be the same. It's not gonna have the same context. It's not gonna have the same kind of effect on people. So she is trying to progress as an artist, and people who are true fans of her should respect that and grow with her.
Yeah, it's like, you know, it's like she sold herself kind of like a package deal, you know, and not just with her music, but like as an androgynous, asexual, like, outsider. So I think that's why some of her fans, you know, do feel betrayed, but should feel that way. Danny, what did you want to add?
I think Chris pretty much said everything I was going to say. You know, I totally agree. Let the girl grow up. If you don't like it, guess what you can do? Turn off the radio.
Yeah, but, you know, but when you simple. Say that, Danny, you when know? You say that, you're saying that to other teenagers, because it's not 50-year-old men that are saying she can't grow up. It's people that are 18, 19 like her.
Right. Yeah.
And that's where the problem is, because I haven't read one article in the last 2 days that said, oh, how dare her for doing this. What I've seen is, like, if you go on Instagram or on Twitter, you're seeing probably 150 Queens and Yas Girl and all that stuff, and then one or two like, you know, how dare you do this? You know, so it's like, that's the thing. We're not talking about, like, somebody who's gonna sit there and make a rational decision to change the radio, because she is their life.
Yeah,
you know, like Taylor Swift is yours.
No, I have other artists too, but, you know, for all we know, this could also be part of her getting ready for the premiere for the Bond movie. You know, maybe she's trying to be a Bond girl. You never know. Bottom line, it's her life. Let her live it the way she wants to live it. We're really no one to be criticizing, regardless of our age.
Okay, Elizabeth?
Yeah, like I understand, you know, what brought you on as a fan initially. And part of it was the look. And I do think it is hard sometimes when you're a teenager and things change, but that's anything. And it is sort of the, like, it's not a phase, except it is totally a phase. Except it just happens to be happening to a famous person that these teens follow. So there is going to be friction. But yeah, I mean, I think one benefit maybe is she's not necessarily rebelling. Well, it's not rebelling against a previous image like a Britney or Christina did back in the day, and it's like that was really confusing for people. The initial image she put out was one she had full control over, and now this new one is one she has full control over as well, and I think that will hopefully make it a little more palatable. You just can't please everybody, though, and there are going to be people who will stay mad, and then in that case, you know, stay mad.
Say bad.
Go ahead, Joe.
By the way, I heard Billie Eilish's Bond song, and it's amazing. I think it's one of the better Bond songs of the whole series. I really do. I think it's on the top end of the Bond songs, like the bottom ones. Way better than Aha. My question is to Danny. Danny, if T Swift tomorrow came out and she was full goth and says, "I'm going for a whole new look and a whole new sound," are you still a Swiftie?
Kind of did that with Reputation.
No. I mean full. I mean,
again, it's all about the music. If it's great music, I'll listen to it. I'll buy it.
Yeah, you know what? And I think too, you know, kind of like what Danny's saying, it is about, you know, the music, but some people are so tied to the person.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. Like Danny, you're like, you know, using the Taylor Swift example, you know, you're a fan of her music. And like you said, if the music changes and doesn't appeal to you, you're not going to be like, oh my gosh, I'm still going to love Taylor Swift. But there are people that are connected to these people, and it doesn't matter what they do. They're going to stand by them no matter what, even if they put out the shittiest music. And then there's things that they'll do in their life that it's not going to matter. And I think, I mean, if this is the worst thing that this girl has done, which is not, obviously it's not a bad thing, I'm just being sarcastic. You know, it's like people that are still criticizing her and people that are her fans that are judging her for this, and they're not real fans of hers. I'm sorry. Like,
yeah, exactly. Fans get a little too demanding of, yeah, like, continue the thing I want.
Right.
Like, there was the Marvel billboard just recently where people are like, bring back Tony Stark. It's like, you don't, you're ignoring storytelling, you're ignoring, you know, character arcs, you just want what you want. And, like, yeah, you're allowed to want what you want, but you also have to understand, someone had a great tweet that I followed that was like, you know, part of being a fan is respecting the creator's vision and not petulantly demanding your own.
Yeah.
Kind of like how people got mad at JT for Man of the Woods. There were some actual really good songs on that album. Many people didn't like it. But again, you know, are you following the artist or are you following the music?
And I think it's even worse with a musical artist. And I think Veronica can back me up on this one because she's a member of the Blockheads, where I think people put in their mind what their like lives are outside of music, these artists, and have this whole thing. And when it doesn't match what they've made, it devastates them. I mean, Veronica, you probably had this happen, right?
Yes, I could tell stories for days. But
I mean, like, yeah, that, I mean, there's a whole thing. It's like you've made up this whole, like, imaginary what they do when they leave the concert. And then when it's not like that, it devastates them. And it's like, no, they're just regular people when they leave. I mean, you know.
Oh, trust me. I've seen it firsthand. And I can tell you guys stories later.
I have too. So, I mean, yeah. I mean, it's crazy.
Let me get Pete in because we're trying to get our guests on.
Okay.
So go ahead, Pete, real quick. And then let's go to Minji. You're muted.
Okay, you're muted.
Wow. Only a year in, right? I think at the end of the day, will she possibly lose some fans because of it? Yeah, probably. But the reality of it is, this is probably going to, you know, expand her her base, because there are probably people that just as apt to have looked at her 2 years ago or 3 years ago and said, oh, her music must be for kids because of the way she looks, and just shut out whatever was out there. And then last year when the Bond song came out, that was probably the first time they actually heard her because it was related to something that older people were into. Yeah, I mean, it's not going to really hurt her long term, but there probably will be a few hurt feelings along the way of people that seem less than thrilled about it. Again, going back to Robert Smith, when with The Cure used to be the most depressing band in the world, and then they put out the album "Kiss Me, Kiss Me, Kiss Me" with the song "Why Can't I Be You" and "Just Like Heaven," and all of a sudden there were some fans that were like, "Wow, I don't get this. He's happy. Why is he so happy all of a sudden?" So there is going to be those fans, but you know what? Some of those fans turn into people like John Hinckley, and so you know, Mark David Chapman. So I'm thinking John Hinckley was Reagan. Sorry,
yeah.
they're all shooting people. But so yeah, you just, you know, you can't just live your life by what your fans are going to tell you to do.
Yeah,
he's happy because it's Friday. He's in love.
Billy, don't worry about it. You'll be all right. There's still people who are fans of R. Kelly. You'll be fine.
And with that, that's a great way to end this. Chris has the last word. Let's bring on our guest. So our guest tonight, Minji Chang, is a Korean-American actor, producer, and entrepreneur based here in Los Angeles. She's the host of the podcast, First of All. Please welcome Minji to TMI Daily. Hi, Minji. How are you?
Hi, everyone. I'm great. How are you guys doing?
We're doing well. Thank you. And thank you so much for coming on today.
Thanks for having me.
So I have a few questions for you, and then I'm going to go ahead and open it up to our panel for a discussion. So I first discovered your podcast when I found the Potluck Podcast Collective. Can you tell us a little bit about what that is?
So the Potluck Podcast Collective is a collective of Asian American podcasters and storytellers. So we are friends and folks that we've known in the entertainment media space, and we all started our respective channels and decided to support one another and to promote each other's channels and to just make things fun and different by kind of being inspired off of one another and just hopefully inspiring other Asian American podcasters to get their stories out there.
That's wonderful. Yeah. And you guys have a lot of great content on there. So I guess that's how I found your podcast. So your podcast is called First of All. Can you tell us a little bit about it and what made you decide to do your podcast?
Absolutely. So my podcast is a real unfiltered conversation on career, family, relationships, and culture. And I started it in 2017 through the encouragement of my producer, Marvin, who is he's the creator of the Potluck Podcast Collective. And he was really all about the podcast life. I was not so much. But we had started one for a nonprofit that we worked for together called Collaboration, which is specifically to elevate Asian American storytellers and creatives and singers and dancers and writers. But basically, I think Marvin got tired of me asking about his relationships and like talking to him about my parents and like having all these different stories that he was just like, you know, you should really start your own channel. I think this actually could be really interesting. That's the kind way of putting it. I think he just wanted me off his back. But I took him up on it because I noticed that a lot of podcasters out there didn't look a lot like me, didn't fall in my age category at that time. So I thought it could be fun. I was a little intimidated, but I decided to just talk about what I wanted to talk about, which is being, you know, a freelancer, college, you know, student debt and relationships with my parents and being an Asian American female. And just the experiences from a genuine place and to ask other people about their stories and hopefully share them with the world and hopefully providing another perspective that other people might not get.
That's wonderful. I think it's so amazing that you're doing that.
Thank you.
What I like about your show is that you talk about your life and about life in general for someone that's living through today's times. But you also reference growing up as Korean American. So I'm Mexican American and I know my life experience is definitely intertwined with my heritage. How much does your heritage play in your everyday life?
You know, sometimes I wish it didn't play as much of a role, but I'd say, you know, the way that I've grown up, it plays a really significant role. You know, I've through my adulthood, especially really kind of embraced the duality of the different cultures that I've grown up with. You know, that's a really big privilege and it's a great advantage sometimes to have such different perspectives, like in one lifetime. But when I was younger, it was a challenge. You know, I felt kind of othered in both categories. I didn't feel American enough. I didn't feel Korean enough. And that was, you know, it was a tricky time. But as an adult, I really appreciate that. So it has definitely shaped, you know, the way that everything from how I approach relationships with authority or with how I treat my family, how I treat work, what are my expectations of myself, how I define success. You know, all those things have been very heavily influenced by my heritage. And I think it's really cool to reflect on that and be able to build how I want it now, not be so like weighed down by it, but to just embrace it and celebrate it and not have it be like a liability as much as I thought when I was a teenager, you know?
So May 1st was the beginning of Asian American and Pacific Islander Heritage Month. So it seems like it has been, I guess I should say, you know, with everything that we've been seeing recently, and I hate to talk about this, but it's important to talk about all the suffering that the AAPI community has been through. Have you personally noticed any changes in the way people have acted towards you, both good or bad, since all this has been coming to light?
Yeah, thank you for asking that. It's been a really peculiar time. I think, honestly, a lot of tensions for a lot of communities started in 2016, to be honest. And there's been a lot of navigating of that and trying to figure out what that means in terms of our day-to-day lives. I personally felt tension starting when the lockdown started a year ago. There was very, like, within the Asian American community, and I'm very involved in that, you know, through my nonprofit work. There was a lot of conversation about that from the get-go, because I think there was a lot of anticipation and a wariness that people had right out the gate of, oh, this could be really bad. And people were already starting to experience violence. And I felt awkward. I felt a bit on edge, even when I would go to the grocery store trying to get my toilet paper like everyone else. But it was pretty tough, just kind of like layering the stress that every person around the world was dealing with in terms of the pandemic, but to feel like there was a target on my back. But also just that's the bad of it. And then also just have like this continuous, like impending doom or like this fear walking around wondering if like your neighbors or other people like might attack you it's a very scary thing. It's very distressing, and it chips away at you. It chips away at your sense of trust and all the goodwill that you have towards your neighbors and all the good that you want to do for others. It kind of just takes it out of you. And we're not the only community to feel that, for sure. It's been really draining to wake up and watch it on repeat in social media. Like, all our friends are sharing it for safety reasons, trying to warn folks, like, be careful where you go. I'm from the Bay Area, which has been a hot spot. I have tons of friends out in New York, and we're all warning our parents, like, don't go outside. And it's been really, really heartbreaking. And I think the good of it is that it's driven a lot of conversation that may not have happened otherwise, or that has been really suppressed or, like, glossed over. There are a lot of stereotypes that are kind of true about the Asian American community, about the model minority myth has done a lot of damage, basically. And so I think there are a lot of folks who have never felt particularly empowered or even visible, or that matter, have significance to even speak up on their own behalf and to feel like they can command any space or ask for respect. So I think that the silver lining to the really terrible situation is that more people are doing that. And hopefully we don't go to the other side where there's a lot of hostility and antagonism on the other side to, like, invite that. I don't want that. I fear for that. I've seen it happen. I've watched people in my life deal with those things, and not just Asian Americans. That's not what I want, because I care for the safety of everybody. But it's certainly, I think it's a silver lining. I think there's a lot of conversations that have been needed to be had for a really long time. And it's a gateway for other conversations and other marginalized communities and populations that also need some light and love shared on them. So I say I think it's a significant plus, because otherwise it would have just remained in the shadow, and who knows how long these terrible things could have just kept on going, because they've been there, you know, these are not new things.
Well, that's what I was just going to say. So Peter, who's on screen, he's my husband, and him and I were talking earlier today when we were putting the show together. Mm-hmm. And we said, you know, if you look back on history, Asians have been discriminated since they immigrated to this country. I mean, that's a fact. And now, thankfully, you know, there is a spotlight on these terrible occurrences that are happening. I just wonder, you know, where was this, you know, why wasn't there a spotlight on this before? Do you feel, I mean, and me personally, I feel like the last 4 years made it worse, you know, because of everything that we had to live through, because of the hateful rhetoric, the racism, whatnot. But where, you know, why was this not, you know, brought to light earlier, like the way it is now? That's what I don't understand. Can you shed some light on that? Or, I mean, I know now with social media, with cameras and everything, you know, but again, you know, it's been happening for, you know, forever.
Right. Mm-hmm. I think it's a mix of kind of, the way I look at it is, I mean, I work in Hollywood, right? I work in the media industry. There's a million different narratives being told on a minute by minute basis. And I think there's a lot of urgency behind certain narratives. And they're like, on a daily basis, we're getting pummeled with stuff to care about. And I think, you know, there's, like I said earlier, the model minority myth, which is a myth, and it is something very politically driven. It's something that's very insidious and very much adopted by all populations, including a lot of Asian Americans, who have kind of used it as a shield to stay safe. You know, there's people that have suffered, but there's kind of cultural implications. I mean, Asian American is over 46 ethnicities and countries and hundreds of languages and so many different cultures. So by no means are we a monolith, or can I speak on behalf of any of that. But what I understand is, you know, there's so much to care about. A lot of Asian Americans have been kind of programmed to just shut up and power through. A lot of people are. There's a lot of people label entire generations to be that, you know, we're the generation of just shut up and get it done. Don't complain, put your head down and get the work done. So I think there's an element of that, which again, prevents people from speaking up and saying, hey, this is terrible. This is inhumane. Don't do this. When you're not used to doing that, when you're not used to taking up space, and when there are certain benefits of being like the model minority, there are some people, I think, that quite frankly have not felt the brunt of the discrimination as acutely, as like intensely and as painfully. It's very like, it's very subtle sometimes, and it's very dangerous. It's a slippery slope when I think it just goes like we're getting an advantage that's not really an advantage because we're being pitted against other minorities and we're basically being like patted on the head for being subservient and quiet, you know, and that's just not true. It's dehumanizing. It is dangerous because it's taken so much attention away from real things like poverty, mental health, things that we need help with and that a lot of other groups need help with. And it's just become an irrelevant non-issue, right? So there's a lot there. And I just, you know, I think I just don't want to take away from anybody else's struggle either. Personally, like if, you know, what the gay community's gone through, what women in general have gone through. Like there's so many different ways that people need help and need attention and need support. So I think there's a mix of things. So I don't know if I gave you even a straight answer. It's just complicated.
No, I really do appreciate you talking about this. You know, yeah. It is very personal, but it's something that needs to be talked about as well. So thank you for your insight. I have one more question before I open it up to the panel, and I want to go back to your podcast, first of all. Yeah. I say in the show's bio that you bring in guests from all walks of life to drop knowledge and speak their truth. What are some of the things that of interest to you for your podcast? Like, what? How do you pick your guests? Like, you know, someone that you find interesting.
Good question. Actually, I've never been asked that. Well, a lot of my guests have been my friends and several of my friends are famous. and some of them have done really incredible things. They've been really big, you know, influential leaders in a lot of capacities. And several of my guests are, you know, not famous in any aspect, but they're just, it's like my roommate, my mother. I have people that I think all humans are fascinating. Personally, I would love to have all of you guys on my show. I just feel like my show could go on forever because I genuinely want to know what makes people tick. And when people and when my friends and I, our colleagues and I, or on a very rare occasion, like a cold contact reaches out and there's something about what they do for a living or what their passion is that clicks with something that I am, I think that creates like, oh, I think we could have a really good deep discussion about a said topic. Like I've had somebody that I reached out to who's a YouTuber and I just really liked her fitness videos on intermittent fasting. So I took a shot and I asked her and she said yes. And I've had people cold call me or like email me. We end up having a phone call just to feel out the vibe if we can carry a conversation. And that's helped because, you know, we just find that, oh, we really care about mental health. We really care about women empowerment. And so that's lended itself to some really good new relationships. And then also pulling out great stories from everyday people that don't think that they're special, but I think that they are. And I'm just like, no, you have something really great to share with the world.
That's wonderful. Do you have a favorite episode that you've done or one of your favorite episodes? And what was it about?
One of my favorites, top of mind, is the one with my mom because she was sharing her immigrant story, only half of which I knew. So she was like, I learned a lot about how awesome my mom is and just how hard it was for her. And, you know, I'm in my 30s now. I feel like just knowing how government infrastructure works and like how those programs and stuff, like I have more context for that. And I think I could hear her more clearly now than I could have maybe if I was just like right out of college. That's one of my favorite episodes. I've had really interesting conversations, all my dating conversations and topics about sexuality, about shame, about, you know, how misinformed so many of us were growing up and being left to our own devices, how we figured things out, about romance and, you know, all of those really personal things. I love those conversations. They educate me. They inspire me to have more of those talks and it drives a lot of other conversation. From what I know from feedback, other people are like, I didn't know I was the only one that thought that. Like, yeah. It's really opens a lot of eyes and minds and hearts. So I love those.
That's wonderful. Okay, so let me open it up now to the panel. Let's start with you, Pete.
Hey, Manji, thank you so much for coming on. I wanted to kind of like get your opinion on something. Us doing a podcast kind of like the same way with you doing a podcast, you probably learned so much about things you didn't know about by talking to different people. Mm-hmm. And today when Veronica and I were sitting down and we were talking about doing this show and like the kind of questions that we might want to ask you, I started realizing things that I haven't even had a chance to think about, when it comes to my own thoughts about Asian Americans. And one of the things I realized is that I probably stereotype as much as anybody does, because last year when Ahmaud Arbery was shot, a couple of days afterwards, we had all of our Black cast members, because our show, just in case you didn't know, we started as a sketch comedy show, and we will be eventually again. But when we started doing this because of the pandemic, so when the Ahmaud Arbery situation happened, I asked a lot of our Black actors to come on and talk to us about how they felt about race in America. But this year, when there was all these hate crimes against Asian Americans, I didn't feel like I had the same leeway to do that with some of our Asian actors, because in my mind, the stereotype is that Asians are very private people, that there's this idea that you keep things within your own community. This is not something to talk about. And I know that's not true, but I probably didn't realize that until today when I was thinking about it. So what I'm wondering, the longest route to a question, is that why do you think it is that it's not okay to stereotype anybody else, but it seems like certain stereotypes when it comes to Asian people still exist. Like Veronica and I earlier, we were talking and I said, it's like, there's the stereotype that Asians are very good at math. Mm-hmm. And she said, well, I don't know why it's a stereotype. I said, well, that's kind of racism in a way, because some people might be good at math, but if you're Asian and you're not good at math, you might think of that as racism. Mm-hmm. So, I'm just wondering, why is it that it seems like with Asian Americans that we're allowed to still stereotype, and that it doesn't seem wrong when we do it?
Great question. Personally, I got into, I'm a doctor converted to media person. Mm-hmm. And by analyzing story and analyzing the impact of media, by the way, I love sketch comedy. And if like you guys ever need any part, like I'm here. And understanding the way that narratives are built, who writes them, who greenlights them, then understanding the industry, like, right? Like how do the stories that get to paint the picture en masse get distributed? That's what I've been like fascinated by, because I'm a huge pop culture fiend. I just, it's disgusting. But when I see that there's been like this mass, in my opinion, frankly, like just to be blunt, like I just feel like everyone's been able to treat Asian people like we're the butt of the joke since forever. As far as I can remember, from Mickey Rooney up until like really like now, whitewashing our characters out of our own stories, like things like that. There's been such a pass at doing that and a collective laugh at our expense. And like I was, there's part of that stereotype of like people have wanted to take the high road. Or honestly, the reason why I'm advocating for artists is because I had to fight the fight of my life to defend my choice to work in media and to work in as an actor and to want to be a writer with my parents. It was not an acceptable thing for them to raise a daughter who was going to be a doctor and suddenly go into Hollywood. It was like the most unacceptable thing. So there's all these kinds of barriers that are true. There's model minority myth things that have proliferated. There's, just so many stories that have not been told. I don't know why it's okay, but there have been, it's just really to validate, I agree that there's been this just general stereotyping and laugh at Asian people's expense, and that people have been really okay with it. It has hurt. It's sucked. It's been infuriating. It's been dehumanizing. And frankly, there's a lot of artists who are like now pushing back on that because they want to show up and show who they are. My podcast is one tiny little way for me to try to do that, to humanize Asian Americans, to say, hey, we're not all X, Y, or Z. But yeah, I hope that answers your question.
No, it definitely does. And I just, again, I apologize for realizing that I'm kind of a jerk.
All of us have biases and everybody has different prejudices, like it's a very normal human thing. I think it's how we deal with it that makes a difference. So I don't think you're a jerk, Pete. I'm just letting you know. From me to you. I don't
tell the rest of them.
No, he's a jerk. Don't let him off the hook.
I'm getting on for 20 minutes.
I'm very nice.
So
I'm glad you're here, and I'm glad you kind of breached a little bit of what my question is, because I kind of want to go into that. And one other thing real quick, try explaining to German parents that you want to go into comedy when Germans don't know what comedy is. So I get where you're coming from. So listen, I'm a huge movie fan, and I love watching foreign movies as much as US movies, and I love watching where the original creators and original stories come from. So I've been watching Asian movies for years and loving them, and finally we're getting like where Parasite wins the Oscar. We had an Asian actress win this year the Oscar, but then we've also got where they still want to change it. They still want to whitewash it. Like, if Parasite didn't win last year, and they were already talking about doing the white version of it, you know, and the same thing like Minari, which was an American film, which somehow won a foreign Golden Globe, even though it was an American film, just because the language was different. Mm-hmm. And since you seem to really have kind of your finger on the pulse in this, I want to know what's your feeling on just letting storytellers from their original culture and language tell the story, and instead of like having to try and remake it for somebody else, it never works out as well. But I want your opinion on the whole thing.
Yeah, well, I'm with you, and thank you for that comment. I'm really big on independent film. Like, I spend a lot of time, I organize the Asian Pacific Filmmakers Experience at Sundance and South by and Tribeca and all that. So I'm very big on indie film, and watching that be like the breeding ground for where new emerging voices and new emerging stories are, which is where I got to see Minari at Sundance last year, which was incredible. And that was like the most packed house I'd ever seen. That was the biggest turnout that I'd personally seen at Sundance, was for this film that ended up being in the foreign category, right? I think there's a really big shift. And the thing that I think hopefully tech and data can help tell to people who are greenlighting things, that there's this really poor misconception that you have to be it to enjoy it. Like, when people make shows like, oh, we need to make this for our white audience, like, so white people can only entertain white people and black people can only, like, that's ridiculous. I grew up never seeing myself in movies and TV. I consumed all of it happily. Like, I watched so much music, television, everything, where I was not present, but people have this like very flawed formula that you have to have English, you have to have white people, you have so whatever ethnicity, insert whatever, right? For somebody else to enjoy it. That's just absurd to me. I think good storytelling that's compelling is good storytelling. People tell each other about good movies. People tell each other, you know, that's still the most powerful marketing tool is word of mouth, right? So I feel like the numbers hopefully are showing more clearly that wider audiences, WIDER audiences, like movies and film and TV shows that are not necessarily about them. They like good stories. They like drama. They like romance. They like to be taken to a different world. Like, God forbid, look at alien movies. Like, we're not, I mean, I could argue for some people, but we're not extraterrestrial. You can't watch a movie about like outer space, because we're not like these justifications, I think, are so weak. And hopefully there's more evidence like these films that people are enjoying en masse to prove to folks that argument, like, oh, we need to add a white character, which I have friends who are directors and filmmakers, and like, they've literally had people saying, we can't finance your film. We don't think it'll do well with, you know, the domestic audience. They just assume those things. I mean, based on what? So I think the narrative's shifting. I think data is shifting, hopefully, and people are opening their minds just like to see what opportunities are out there. I don't know where a lot of these people make their decisions. I know that it's an industry, so I'm not naive, but I think there's more and more evidence kind of building up to like, it's about good storytelling, about good acting, about good writing, than it is about, you know, these things. You don't have to compromise the soul and the integrity of a story to sell. Like, I just don't agree with that.
My friend is a big, thriller horror movie kind of type, that kind of thing. And I said, oh, you have to see I Saw the Devil. And then they watched it and they were like, I didn't get finished it. And why? He says, I don't want to read. I'm like, come on, that's such a good movie. So
that's stop it. And they can watch, there's, if they don't want to, yeah, they might miss out on a great film. But
they're going to miss out on a great story.
Yeah, yeah.
Elizabeth.
Well, speaking of representation and kind of your study and dive into that. Are what have you liked that you've seen that's like in like mainstream Hollywood, which is slowly, slowly, slowly changing ever so slightly? Have there been like the Asian American characters or Pacific Islander characters that you've liked how they've portrayed, or maybe you wanted to see something a little different? And especially ones that like you've been saying aren't in the, like the model minority box of like, oh, they're the smart one because they're Asian, like, and yeah, all that other utter crap.
Well, personally, I mean, I may be biased. People might call me out because I know the cast and crew of Crazy Rich Asians. That movie actually surprised me with how much mm-hmm. I loved it. Yeah. I was a little bit, there's a hesitancy with a lot of people that are Asian Americans of like being honestly like angry about like, why is this about rich Asians? Like, this is not how all Asian people are. But I thought it was really, it was a cute rom-com. I'm a yeah. sucker for rom-coms. Oh, yeah. And I thought no. it was really cute.
It worked, yeah.
yeah, and I loved Minari. I thought that reminded me, you know, I'm a little bit younger than the main character, but it reminded me of my own family. Mm-hmm. I know friends that have grown up in Kentucky, in Michigan, in Arkansas, and my cousins are in Alabama, my other cousins are in Texas. There's a lot of truth to that story. I thought it was very sincere. I think Awkwafina, she's just a hilarious character. She's so wacky. I know her through the nonprofit that I work mm-hmm. for through collaboration, and she's just gone from like a YouTube viral, you know, sensation singing about my badge, and like that was her thing on the scene, to becoming a serious actor and doing The Farewell. The Farewell was really moving. That was another okay. film that was actually yeah. told to de-Chinese, like make it more accessible. And I'm glad that Lulu Wong stuck to her guns and she's yeah. like, no, I'm not changing it. So characters like that are not all perfect and that are wacky and weird and
yeah.
funny and sexy and all of them. Yeah.
I'm from Michigan. And I got so excited when Stephen Young said like, I was in Taylor, Michigan. I was like, woo, like on my couch.
My brothers went to school in Michigan. They're both Wolverines. Right, so.
Oh, okay. Yeah. My brother went to U of M. I went to MSU.
Awesome. I love it.
Chris.
First of all, thank you for being here. Secondly, I want to say I totally agree with Crazy Rich Asians. But I knew it was going to be good. I was, not to like name drop, but I was dating somebody in the industry at the time that like let me read the script in like 2016. And I was so pissed that it took so long because I was like, oh, they must have like just put this in a shelf somewhere, because like I read it and I was like, this is fantastic. This is going to be so good. I don't know what took them so long. But that kind of leads into my question. You're somebody that works in media and you're a person of color like me. And like, so like sometimes when I see things in Hollywood, like movies or things of that nature, where like, it's like, you know, like in 2016, it was Oscar so white. Then all of a sudden the next year, a bunch of people started winning Oscars again. And then like, you know, it kind of died off. And then like some shit went down after Trump got elected and some people got shot by police. And all of a sudden black artists are winning awards again, and it just kind of like makes, I'm a little bit skeptical, like I'm not sure if it's authentic. And yeah. now we're kind of in the same boat, like you're seeing more Asian Americans that are on screen now, more things are being made, more movies and stuff like that that are highlighting Asian Americans and Asian culture in general. Do you ever feel that kind of in the back of your mind, like, is this real or are they just kind of pandering because this is the hot thing that's going on?
I mean, to be real, yes, absolutely. I mean, I've seen, you know, I just can't imagine. I see it up from multiple perspectives because I can't imagine with all the films out there and all of the content, how you're going to narrow it down to one best film. Like that is like just on a numbers level. I'm like, that's ridiculous. Yeah. Right. Because there's so many good movies and who's to say like this is the one film that beat every other film. I just don't agree with that. But I do understand, you know, it's political. It's definitely political. It's nice because there's so many ways that you have to like qualify things, I guess. So it's a love hate thing. And if someone nominate me for an Oscar, I would be incredibly grateful. I would also wonder a lot of questions. but I'll still be hype about it. You know, I'm not gonna lie about that. But sure. Definitely it's when you're in the industry and you see behind the smoke and mirrors and you know a lot of the ways that the way the sausage gets made.
Right.
there's room for skepticism for sure. And just being, I don't want to be cynical, but it's also, I think, what a lot of artists struggle with internally of being, well, what's the point then? Is it to win an Oscar? Is it to make something that moves populations of people to think or laugh or to cry? Or, you know, that to me is, I've wondered about that by watching the Oscars. Yeah. Is this the ultimate pinnacle of success? Or is it working with people that I respect, making a living off of it so I can keep doing it? Like, those are, I think, internal questions a lot of people are going to ask. But for sure, to answer your question, I get skeptical at times.
Yeah, it sucks because, like, you'll see, like, a really good movie, but then, like, if something happened that earlier that year or something like that before that movie came out, and then, like, it's always, like, it kind of puts an asterisk next to it. It's like, I mean, like when Moonlight won, it's like, oh, yeah, it won Best Picture, but, like, did it really? Like, or were they just trying to give us one? And it's like... Right. This movie was good. Like, it's just good. But you know, in the back of people's minds, especially people who really didn't see the movie or really don't fuck with it, like, they're probably thinking, like, well, they probably just they had to give them one. Like, they had to, you know what I mean? And it just sucks to have that feeling of watching, like, Moonlight win and not and knowing that people are thinking that in the back of their minds.
It does. It does. Yeah. It takes away from, like, the celebration of it. But I also think that, like, if I'm in the position, I think what's been happening is this, like, wider conversation. People are much more real about it. They're saying, hey, this isn't the end all be all, but I'm going to take this win and I appreciate it. And then use that. A lot of people have been being intentional saying, if I can open a gate for other voices, whoever that voice may be, then they're going to do that. And I think it's really exciting. Like, I, at the end of the day, even though I can be a total cynic and like a very like, is this half full or half empty? The end of the day, I choose to say, let's look at the opportunity and like see what we can do to move forward. But I'm not going to be, hopefully, not naive about it and not be like, everyone's on my side when it's not that. Like, it's still an industry. There's still sharks out there.
Well, that's kind of why, like, I like people like Jordan Peele, because, like, you know, maybe you could have said Get Out was a give me, but then he did Us, and then that movie was actually even, it's just as good as Get Out, if not better. So then it was like, okay, cool. Like, he won because he won, not because, you know.
Oh, Jordan Peele, he is an inspiration. I love Jordan Peele. Personally, like, the filmmaker I want to try to be like is Ryan Coogler. Like, I think he's just, how do you do that from Fruitvale to Creed to Black Panther? Like, what? And he did them well. He did them all well. It was, it's crazy.
Yeah.
Danny, did you have a final question?
I just wanted to say thank you because, without really going into much detail, I've had a really rough day. And looking at a picture of my grandma and, you know, realizing that she had so many great stories and seeing how you put so much value into the story time that you had with your mom, you know, makes me wish that I had recorded her, you know, for posterity and stuff like that, you know, because we all have a story, you know, and I think that's the beauty of it, because hearing your story, I kind of healed a little, you know. And I've been shamed twice this week, and it's not anything I really talk about. And I'm trying not to like break down, but I was shamed this week for my, for being Hispanic. And I was shamed this past week for my weight. And I think I've grown into a person that can actually, you know, just keep my chin up, you know, but inside it hurts nonetheless. Right. And when I hear other people stories and I hear the stuff they go through, it helps you realize that you are not alone, that there are other people that are going through similar experiences and stuff like that. I definitely want to listen to your podcast and hear the different stories that you've had with other people, because you'd be surprised what you can find in other people's stories that'll help heal a part of yours. So mine really wasn't a question, but more as a thank you, you know, and I'm really glad I got to be part of this conversation today.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Danny. And I'm really sorry if I can energetically send you a hug through Zoom. Like, that's, it's, these are like the harsh realities, I think, of everyday life. And that's, I think what, I think originally for my podcast, I was hoping it to be like a soapbox, but honestly, I was just like, these are everyday things that everybody goes through. This is just my version. And this is this person's version. And I think same exact thing you said, I got a lot of comfort from hearing other people's pain and joy, like both of them. They gave me either hope or they gave me comfort because I knew I wasn't alone. So hopefully there's something there. And like, I would love to keep it. It's just so great to talk with all of you. I feel so honored that I was invited to your guys' podcast and your space.
Well, Minji, please come back anytime. We would love to have you back. And I know your podcast, first of all, is heard everywhere that podcasts are found. And how often do you release an episode? Can you tell our audience?
The goal is every week. There have been times where I have taken a little break. But yeah, the goal is every week.
Okay, so we have the information and we're also going to post it on our Instagram page as well. So awesome. Thanks again for coming on, and please, you know, come back anytime. We'd love to have you back.
Thank you. It was great talking with all of you.
You too. Yeah. Have a good night.
Bye.
Bye.
So we close tonight with Celebrity Hunger Games, in which we take famous characters from TV or film and we decide who will win in a Hunger Games battle. Tonight, in honor of May 4th, it's Star Wars Hunger Games. Now, anyone could argue who would win a battle to death between Luke and Darth or Rey and Kylo. So instead, we're using some characters of the second and third tier. We're using
the B-Squad.
And third tier characters. Now, Pete, I'm not reading the participants because I can't pronounce any of these names.
And oh, I'm going to be able to read them any better.
I'm going to sit back while you guys are arguing. Go ahead.
Okay, so I wanted to make sure that we were very inclusive tonight with all three trilogies. So I went through a list of some of the more notable second tier people. So here's the people that will be battling tonight on Celebrity Hunger Games. Jar Jar Binks from the second trilogy.
Fuck you, first of all, for even including him.
I'm gonna
fuck you. First of all,
you ever hear he's a secret Sith Lord?
Hey, fuck that. Hey,
listen,
fuck
this that. Is how it works. Just accept fuck it. That.
How dare you?
Wedge Antilles from our first trilogy and also made an appearance in the third one. Shmi Skywalker from the second trilogy.
You motherfucker.
Rose Tico from the third trilogy. Admiral Akbar from the first and third trilogy. Kira from Solo. Cassian and Andor from Rogue One. And Maz Kanata from the third trilogy. So let me go through them again. Jar Jar Binks, Shmi Skywalker, Wedge Antilles, Rose Tico, Admiral Akbar, Kiara.
I think it's just Kira.
Kira, sorry. Kira, yeah. I was thinking it was the R&B artist. Kira.
Kesha? No, I'm fucking.
Cassian and Andor and Maz Kanata. So who would be our... Our people, and wait, I think we also could enjoy watching Veronica's eyes glaze over during this.
More right now.
I'll go first. First I want to say fuck all those other characters, especially Jar Jar Binks. I think, here's the thing. The big thing about Hunger Games, if you watched it, remember we talked about this, it's about resourcefulness and getting the crowd on your side, and that's, which is also another resource that'll help you kill and maim and destroy your enemy. Therefore, if we're going off of that alone, about being resourcefulness and like surviving the game, and I think has the stones to actually murder somebody, not just have people do it for her, I gotta go with Kira. Because if even though Solo movie was shitty, she went from nothing to being like one of the highest and richest like lieutenants in like the biggest crime organization, and was actually doing better than Solo himself in the world whenever he found her again. And even after that, even after she decided she didn't want to do that, she still survived and was able to get away from that crime lord. So like the fact of the matter is, I think she could just, if nothing else, she could outsmart most of the characters. And then on top of that, I also think that she's gangster enough to do what she has to do to make sure that she survives.
Who's her character from Rogue One?
It's Cassian Andor. It's the one played by Diego Luna. Luna. Yeah.
I agree with a lot of things that Chris said.
Yeah.
But I think it should have been Jyn from Rogue One.
Now that would have changed my game.
See, because that's my whole thing. Because like Cassian,
star. So
Cassian, yeah, but Cassian is sort of, but like Cassian is pretty good too.
Yeah.
I mean, and the other thing is it old Akbar? Is it like Akbar when he was like an admiral, or it's, can it be younger Akbar?
You know, maybe it's mid-range Akbar.
Middle-aged Akbar.
When Akbar was working his way up, he had to like to get to being an admiral, he had to like be in the shit. So it's not like he doesn't know how to scrap. That's my
You can't pick anybody from Rogue One. They all suck at living because they all died in explosions. So they, well, no one survived.
I love that ending. It was a great ending.
I mean,
okay, like, so Admiral Akbar, is it just Akbar, or does he have his fleet with him? Because that changes the whole thing.
I called him Admiral Akbar because that's what his name is.
His title.
But yeah, I just put it in because most people would know him as Admiral Akbar.
I think I see a lot of what Chris said about Kira. I think that could also apply to Maz Kanata or
Maz Kanata.
I've seen the damn movies, and I don't remember how you say her name. Because I mean, sorry, Shmi and Rose, too sweet, too nice for this world. Out in the first round.
Done.
Sorry, I like them, but there's no way.
Yeah.
Jar Jar, too dumb. Just gonna like step on his own landmine, kind of dumb in the Hunger Games arena,
or eat the bees or some shit.
Like eat something he's not supposed to.
Drink that
Wedge. I don't know a ton about Wedge, but I feel like he's only solid in the X wing. And if he doesn't have the X wing, then what does he do? You know, not going so hot.
The books aren't canon, but in one of the books when he wasn't in the X wing, he was total shit. So he needs to be in a pilot
seat.
He's only good in a pilot seat.
Ain't no fucking X-Wings.
Like, don't get him into X-Wings.
Yeah.
Unless you sponsor him.
I haven't actually seen Rogue One. Sorry. So I don't know a lot about Cassian, but also, you know, everybody dies in the explosion at the end. So he's also clearly willing to sacrifice himself for someone else. So again, I feel like he's going down. So I think it comes down to Akbar, Kira, or Maz Kanata. You know what? I like Emilia Clarke, so I will go ahead and say Kira. Also, I feel like, as Chris mentioned, audiences, I feel like as cute as Maz Kanata is, because she's a little creature thing, and people will go more for a pretty girl. So, yeah. Vote Kira.
Yes, truly. She will get more crowd. Yeah.
I have a whole different thought on this. I think immediately they all gang up and kill Jar Jar just to shut him up.
I
think Shmi gets taken out pretty easily because she couldn't even get away from the sand people. Okay. So, I mean, if you can't get away from sand people, forget it.
And so Rose
didn't realize is expendable, just like the director, just like JJ.
Oh, they did her so goddamn dirty in that movie. Ridiculous. They literally go, "Hey, Rose, do you want to come on this mission?" And she goes, no, I'll stay here. You all go. And they're like, "Thanks, Rose." And they just fuck off with Alex.
I think that
Akbar did not deserve that.
Akbar's going to live for quite a while, but eventually he'll look right into the camera and go, "It's a trap," and get killed.
Or somebody starts craving fish sticks, you know?
That's right. Well, calamari. He is calamari.
He's Dalmar, yeah.
So I'm thinking this is really a battle between Wedge, Cassian, and Maz Kanata. And Maz, I saw her fight in one of the last
one
three
of
films.
Them. She was
two of them. She seems like a scrapper. Yeah, so I'm going to give her the edge over Wedge. So I think it's her versus Cassian. And the only reason I think I'm going to go with Cassian on this for a couple of reasons. He could be rugged when he had to be, but he was also very compassionate at other times. So I think he's just going to put on that charm to get Kira to be cool with him and like be an ally of his, and then he'll wipe her out near the end.
No,
because he's not afraid. No,
isn't he like too noble though to like kill another person?
I think
see, like Maz has the Velma from Scooby Doo problem. She'll be fighting and all that, but the minute you knock her glasses off, she can't see shit.
Her little tiny eyes.
But Pete, here's the problem with your theory is because here's the thing. At the end of the day, if you remember, I don't know if you ever seen The Hunger Games, but none of the crowd gives a fuck about compassion because she was showing compassion to Rue.
What I'm saying
and they sent one of the other opponents to kill Rue purposely to get her detached from the world.
But I think
one
like,
of the first ones because she fell in love. So unless these two fall in love, the crowd ain't feeling it.
I think that Cassian is gonna get the crowd behind him because he has that compassionate side. He's got that rugged machismo. I wouldn't say Latin because I don't know what race he was in the movie. I guess he was.
People have been joking that, like, man, Star Wars has been doing decent with their space Latinos because they also have Pedro Pascal and Oscar Isaac.
What I'm saying is that he's gonna get the audience behind him. And he's gonna be smooth. I think he wipes out everybody at the end.
But you also got to remember too, the crowd isn't everything because at the end of the day, the government controlled how they wanted the game to go. So like,
the contestants don't even hear the crowd. And when you go down to it, if we're seeing right now, I think we're all agreeing that it's going to end up being Cassian versus Kira, right?
She's way more ruthless. You were saying she got out of the criminal stuff. No, man, she just went to a bigger criminal.
Yeah,
she left the Crimson Permanent Assurance or whatever the fuck the name of that organization. Yeah.
She was like, I'm going to Darth Maul.
I insured my Jedha.
It wasn't Crimson Tide and it wasn't Crimson Peak, but it was Crimson something. And I kept laughing because I kept thinking of all those other variations except for whatever it actually was called.
Crimson Dawn.
Crimson Dawn. Okay, whatever.
You know what's great is that with all of us, how many people on here saw Solo? So we're half the audience. It's
I did not hate Solo
Solo's biggest Donald problem Glover is that they made it a Star Wars movie. If it would have came out as an independent space movie, like sci-fi movie, people would love it.
If Ron Howard had two more kids, he would have almost tripled the audience for this movie.
He shouldn't have even had to come in. So the Lord and Taylor would have fixed that thing.
This movie has Solo has his call on everything but the actual Insurance, Lord Taylor.
But my point is that Kira's way more ruthless. Look at Cassian at the end of Rogue One. Oh, you're my buddy. Let's have a hug as we get blown up. You know what I mean? That's the same kind of thing. She's gonna stick a knife in his neck.
He's gonna pull it all along.
We may get two winners this year. No, we ain't, bitch. Yep. And that's it.
No, he's gonna win. You think he was being like noble and hugging his friend? What he was thinking is, I'm gonna grab her, and if this thing doesn't kill us, I'm getting in there. Because I'm clearly the coolest man that she knows.
You saw a different movie. I didn't see the movie.
Was he that swaggery?
No, he was not.
By the way, Jin, this mission goes off.
Elizabeth, you have to. It is Star Wars. Please watch Rogue One.
It's really good because
there's a scene in there. There's a scene in there where like they have the shield around a planet.
Yeah,
but there's like this door that opens and closes. And like we gotta get the code for it. I'm like, you stole this from Spaceballs.
the code's
1234. It's his luggage combination. What are you talking about?
Remember to change the combination on my luggage.
Listen, I know we can't talk about this forever, but are we all safe to say that Jar Jar Binks is the one who's dying first?
Let's vote.
Kira or Cassian? Who votes Cassian? Who votes Kira?
You already know.
And meanwhile, Veronica has finished her novel. And
who says sweet
Veronica just woke up. She's like, what? What happened?
I have no idea what you guys are saying.
I know. I'm literally watching you try to figure it out. Kira is our victor.
She gets to live in the victor's village, and then she gets faith and riches.
Veronica actually saw Rogue One. So that's
Rogue One is actually a really good Star Wars movie. As a Star Wars movie, it is really good. A
movie period, it's actually really good.
Yes, it is a really good Star Wars movie.
Diego Luna, the one that you took me to see? Yeah. I love Diego Luna.
And Elizabeth, you got to see it. Because
the only thing she cares about in the movie, she's like, oh, Diego Luna's in it.
I think it's the only one I haven't seen.
All right, we'll watch it tonight.
We're going to kill her into watching it on Star Wars Day. Yeah. I don't got much else to do tonight, so...
Are you guys done?
Yes.
It looks like we are.
Okay.
We were done before we even started, to be honest with you.
Wonderful. Well, that is our show for tonight. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll see you back here again tomorrow at 6 p.m. Bye, everyone. Have a good night and stay safe. Bye.
Are you guys done?
Remember,